Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, Cars of the Year. And Lumo SA, Aussie-owned, made for South Australia.
Yeah, thanks for joining us on Sports Day. Play Keno from only $1 a game with a draw every few minutes. There's always a time for a spot of Keno. Play today. Gamble responsibly. Ben Hook is my name. I'm in the chair for David Wildey. He will be back tomorrow night. But it is great to welcome back to the Sports Day desk, Malcolm Blight. Blighty, nice to see you.
Hello, Ben Hook. How are you?
Mate, I'm fantastic. We haven't caught up for a while. You had the week off last week. Yeah. I have to get straight off the top. The sad passing of Neil Curley, of course, 88 years of age. We lost him last Wednesday. I mean, someone who I imagine touched you regularly in your footy career.
Yeah, did he ever, yeah. And to Barb and the family, you know, sincere condolences. Obviously, we've known Curls for a long, long time. And Barb, we've come across and been at their place as well. So Patsy and I, so we really do pass on our best wishes to the family. Now, I've got to tell you that, and Curls would love me to tell you this story. I'm sure he would.
I've been waiting here because we don't talk before we come on air. We talk very little. I like to just save it. But you've got a great story about Curls, I would imagine.
Yeah, I have actually. Now, I played my first ever game for Woodville. League game.
Right.
Senior football. 18 years of age, against a team called the Glenelg Football Club down at Glenelg Oval.
Okay, so Glenelg versus Woodville at Glenelg. So this is probably what, late 60s, is it?
1968.
Right, okay.
I was 18. The captain coach of the Glenelg Football Club happened to be that day, one Neil Curley, whom I, as a youngster, had watched this man develop as a great player, a great coach, and a tough as nails.
Yeah,
mate.
Yeah.
His reputation preceded me, I can tell you. Anyhow, I've walked down. I played full forward in my first game. I did manage to sneak three goals, but I walked down the full forward, you know, when we used to play positions in those days, and in the back pocket was the resting ruck rover, Donald Neil Curley. Mate, I played a guy called Terry Gunn, and anyhow, I stood on his right hand side because Curl was on my left hand side.
Mate, you thought Terry Gunn was going to protect you.
I must say, it was the most scariest day, most nervous I've ever been in my life. But it was good. I mean, he did a few things to other people, but he missed me. But it was the most nervous I ever was in the game, and it was just the great Neil Curley was alongside me.
He must have coached you once or twice in state games.
Yeah, he did, actually, a number of times. Yeah. My first ever state game was against Western Australia in Adelaide Oval, and Neil was the coach then, which turned out to be okay. And then finally, in the carnival in Perth in 1972, when I made the All-Australian team, I moved from Ruck Rover after 10 minutes when a guy called Bob Kingston from Port Adelaide broke his arm, and I went full back. So Curls put me there. And over the journey, and I spent a lot of time with him at state football and also at Channel 7 when I used to work in the commentary team. And obviously of later years with Noel's Caravans and doing stuff together there and taking over from him. I mean, my heart missed a beat. And I think the whole of South Australia that ever knew the man, I mean, his enthusiasm. I mean, when that first ever state training night, I must tell this story very quickly, Ben. First ever state squad training. I'd made it for the first time ever, you know, a young kid from Woodville.
Yes.
Anyhow, we're doing some tackling practice, would you believe, at middle of Adelaide Oval.
So midweek. You've done your Woodville training. Everyone else has done their club training. And the state coach, Neil Curley, decides you need some tackling practice.
Anyhow, sadly, I think he's departed now. Norwood Ruckman, quite a very good player called Greg Cookle. I tackled him and there was an awful crack.
Mm.
Anyhow, the leg was broken.
God.
I mean, mate, I just stood there. I don't know. What do you do now?
Yeah.
And anyhow, eventually the stretcher came out and
So training stopped?
No. I'm sorry to say this. Curls just said, oh, that's bad luck, son. Just move over here and we'll continue tackling. It was like, oh, no. How tough is that? I mean, it was poor Greg. But, that was my introduction to Neil Curley at training.
Oh, we're going to miss him, aren't we?
Yeah,
I told the listeners last week, so I won't go over it again, but I got to play some social golf with him.
I mean, you
know what it's like to be coached by him. I was being coached by him in a social Lambros game of golf, and I've never been so pumped up in all my life to hit a decent drive. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
I saw someone mentioned that he was a fair dinkum cheat at bocce. Johnny Reed and myself, you know, obviously really good mates, and we went up there with the girls and, you know, had a great time. But anyhow, we took him on the bocce with him and Brian Ferrari from next door. We actually won. It was the first time we'd ever been beaten. He tried to cheat, but we just wouldn't let him.
So much to talk about in football on this Monday evening. Our hot topic, I think we're going to start with the Adelaide Crows, who I thought were very, very brave for long periods of time against Melbourne. But in the end, it's another loss, and they're sitting at 4-11 after 15 rounds.
Yeah, they are. Games. Look, yeah, I mean, 29 points against the top team. I always look at, you know, when I start measuring...
And they were within five, Malcolm, with 10 minutes left.
And it's happened quite a bit this year. Yep. And that's what happens as you know, the talent runs out or the legs run out. Call it what you like. But I just reckon, if you think, just break that down, that's about a goal and a quarter.
Mm.
A quarter.
Yep.
See, there's not much needs to go right or wrong.
It is a fine margin.
Yes, it is. So that, to me, I think is a team that's probably starting to improve. I think Tech started off very well. Jordan Dawson, gee, isn't he a good player?
Looks amazing, doesn't he?
Can I just say, in the coaches' votes, I've just got them, Petrarca got 10 from Melbourne, Oliver 7 and Stephen May 7, and Jordan Dawson got 2. There's some other Melbourne players as well. So Jordan Dawson, what a player he's been in a pickup.
Well, Ben Keyes was the best and fairest last year, and he was picked up basically for, he was a bargain basement buy, wasn't he? And
yes,
Jordan Dawson has come in, and they've paid a bit for him, but it's been money well spent because he has been outstanding. Which leads me to this, Malcolm. I want to ask you this question. We've got so much to talk about, so we'll try and keep it as brief as possible. But Collingwood was 17th last year, changed their coach. I'm not suggesting for a minute that we change Matthew Nix as coach. Changed their coach, and Craig McRae has come into Collingwood and said, no, we're not going to rebuild. We're not going to move on all of our experienced guys. We're going to keep Brody. We're going to keep Pendlebury. We're going to keep Sidebottom. And we'll bring a few in along with them, and we'll just see how far we go. They've kept Mason Cox. All of these guys making an influence. Suddenly they're 10-5 and playing North Melbourne this week.
Yeah, look.
Is the rebuild something that you... Is it maybe dead? Is the rebuild dead? Is it too hard?
No.
Is it too much pain?
No. Eventually you'll go down because the system will drag you down with draft and salary cap. But one of the things that interests me, every coach coming in, all they ever talk about, they overemphasise defence.
Mm.
Now, I've always said defence is so essential, but you've got to go the other way. Now, Nathan Buckley, we know, was playing very defensively compared to other teams. McRae's just freed him up a bit.
Okay.
And one of the things, you know, when you do a review of the game, This is the trick with a review of the game, is that I can show you how Melbourne, let's take Melbourne playing Adelaide.
Yes.
I can show you where Petrarca and Oliver didn't do what they're supposed to do defensively.
Yes.
Because they were trying to do it the other way. Hard work, right? So what you do as a coach, and this is what happens, the young coaches, I can see it now, the picture just unfolds, is what they do, they emphasise the defence that we could have stopped the goal, rather than say, hey, if you went a second earlier, or if you went over there, if you went here, if you went there as a group, you can actually do it offensively.
Mm.
And that's what I say now, you get too much on defence, not enough of attack. And I just want to throw a couple of stats at you now.
Go on.
We'll talk about Port Adelaide in a minute.
Yep.
But North Melbourne.
Yeah. Their percentage is 49.
Yep.
They are, on average, that means they are getting double their score per game.
Correct. One win. You know, in 1972, I signed with a club called North Melbourne.
Right. Okay. So your last year at Woodville was 1972. 73.
I didn't go till 74. Anyhow, they'd won one game when I signed with them. Their percentage was 63%. Right now, North Melbourne's percentage is 49.5.
Yes.
You know how much that's different? That's 20 points in attack. I won't go through every detail.
It's the average points for you're referring to, aren't you?
Yeah. They average 54 now, 74 back in 1972.
So
the whole emphasis from the coaching group, I can tell you now, and that's why some of the midfielders, I guess, are at odds with what's happening around them, because the emphasis is on total. I can actually pick out a mistake easily off defensively.
Yeah.
I tell you what. Try and create something. That's harder to do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the mindset of teams has got to be, it's got to be both ways. But you can't have it all the one way if you want them to kick some goals.
So you're saying that the difference between North Melbourne 1972 and North Melbourne 2022 is they were trying to kick an extra goal a quarter, four goals
Correct.
A game.
Correct.
Yeah. And you would encourage that as a way to prepare your players over and above.
Correct.
Having eight inside 50s in the second half.
Correct.
North Melbourne.
Because what you do, you actually focus on defence. So what you actually do, if I'm a midfielder now, I can tell you now, You know, I played a lot in the midfield. As soon as the coach said, oh, they've got three out the middle, I'd actually try and work to find another one. Yes, you'd look at your opponent, but you'd also still want to get the ball out. The only way you get back in the game is get the ball out the middle and kick a goal.
Port Adelaide we're going to talk about, but before we do, Doug from Blakeview has called in. We're talking about old guys still being able to make it on a football field. He wants to talk about the Cats, Geelong. Doug, welcome to Sports Day.
Yeah, I'm certainly not a Geelong supporter. I'm a keen crow. But how often at the start of the year have we said, oh, no, Geelong are too old. They can't make the top four again. And here we are, round 17, and where are they on the ladder? Second, and they're playing Melbourne on Thursday night. And what a cracker game that's going to be. They're still going to make the top four. How many years in a row now? It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, good on them. I think there's a story that's come out today as well that they had a massive illness go through their team ahead of the preliminary final last year where they got beaten up pretty badly.
I actually, a few weeks ago, Ben, it came out, I didn't mention it, but it's essentially come out public. I spoke to the Adelaide Football Club, both the staff and the players in separately. And I just said at that time, and it just happened up in a happenstance, that where the club is at the moment is that Adelaide were the second last team to actually, in the AFL era, is the second last team to hang on. Hang on for as long as you possibly can to be still relevant and not in the bottom four. It is unavoidable. Geelong will be there within 2 years.
Yeah.
It's unavoidable because eventually you can't just keep topping up with 29 and 30-year-olds as they're doing. But they've been very good at it. They've been a great football club. They've won the most games in the AFL. Hawthorn have won the most premierships. Mm. So you can't say it's wrong. But it is unavoidable. So within 2 years, all those guys are going to be gone, and they're going to have to find some new ones very quickly.
I just wonder whether national draft, rookie draft, supplemental player period, mid-season draft that could even become a mid-season trade period, that the old-fashioned go bad for 4 years rebuild may be something that you can try and skirt the edges around. You could be right and I could be wrong, Malcolm, but I'm just not convinced that the full-on rebuild will be something that we'll see too often in the future.
No, and I've always said, if the bottom team won six games, this would be the best competition in the world.
Hey, we need to play Who's in the Budget Truck Quiz, Malcolm. Moving house, use the team that's easy and affordable. Budget car and truck rental, 13-27-27. The winner gets a double pass to the movies, a Signet portable phone charger, and goes in the running to win four MTX Club tickets on the eastern side of Adelaide Oval with a $200 voucher for food and beverages at Adelaide Oval. Here comes the clue, ladies and gentlemen. Listen in. You can have a crack now. Chat to Brendan, our producer, 8223-0000. I am a premiership player who has won a showdown medal. I'm a premiership player who has won a showdown medal. Of course, we'll be adding another clue tomorrow night and Wednesday night. That's the Budget Truck Quiz. Get on the road faster, 13-27-27. Need to take a break, Malcolm. I know that Brian has rung in. We will try and get to Brian from Port Nolunga very shortly, but we're going to catch up with Damien Barrett on the other side of the break from afl.com.au who wants to talk about century goal kickers. Know any?
Yeah, I do know a couple.
Yeah, I reckon I might be one just sitting in this studio here. Get on the road faster, 13-27-27. That's the Budget Truck Quiz. And Tyre Power, where family safety rates number one. We're off to a break. You're listening to Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Lumo SA, Aussie-owned, made for South Australia.
Ben Hook and Malcolm Blight with you. 8223-0000 is the week's open line. Discover exceptional customer service. Week's homes, discover different. Well, Malcolm, we're going to talk about a topic that is close to your heart. Blokes who kick truckloads of goals. And I know that you have done that yourself on many, many occasions to talk about it. If he's from afl.com.au. His name is Damien Barrett. He comes to us for expert car service. Book online at repcoservice.com. Damien Barrett, welcome to Sports Day.
Yeah, good evening, guys.
Great to have you. Tell us a bit about the project of Centurions and just a little bit about maybe what the research you've done on the man on my right.
I didn't need any research on the man on your right. I grew up a North Melbourne supporter living very close to the Arden Street ground where he made his own there for his nine seasons in the VFL. So that was already in their head. But now the project is something we'd had an idea to do for 3 or 4 years at AFL and just finally, I suppose, with COVID removing itself a little bit from our lives, we're able to get out there and do it. And I just find it extraordinary, Ben and Malcolm, that there's only 28 people in the history of the game. Now, obviously, it's VFL and AFL. I know there's other Stanful and Waffle and other competitions, but in VFL, AFL, only 28 in total, only 21 living, and they did it, again, only on 57 occasions. It's I don't think it's celebrated enough when it's all said and done.
Damien, I agree with you. Sorry. can I just say, I think I spoke to you when we did the bit with myself at Woodville Oval, which was great that you came across to Adelaide and did that. I just didn't realise, John Anderson, a great writer, journalist in the Herald Sun, all that sort of stuff, wrote a book called 100 Goals. And at the start of my little section, I read most of them, at the start of my little section was a thing called, that is in here, is a bit of an oddity because he only played the one season at 32 years of age in Melbourne, but I was the 15th. That was the shock. I'd never actually sat down, and you knew about the Hudsons and the Wades and all those sort of people. But I just couldn't believe it. I was only the 15th in 1982, and the competition had been going nearly 100 years. It was amazing, really.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, and there was a massive gap too, Malcolm. And again, just going through the records, and it forces you to then go through and what happened. And there was a massive gap between John Coleman doing it for the third time he did it in 1952, and then there was a big gap for Peter Hudson in 1968, and then obviously, Doug Wade did it at two different footy clubs, and you had McKenna doing it and Jezelinko. And you're right, you get to yourself there. And then Bernie Quinlan followed you for the next 2 years after that.
Yeah, look, there's two that I'd be fascinated whether you got to hold of. There's two names that are seen to be very reclusive. One's a bit less than the other. But Tony Lockett, the greatest goal kicker of all time, and the freakish, the guy I coached for many years, Gary Ablett Sr., How have you handled them in this project for AFL.com, Damien?
They're works in progress, those two, Malcolm. So we're waiting through. We've got about, I think it was 8 or 9 in the can. I've got another series of interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks, next 3 or 4 weeks. So we'll get another 5 or 6 in the can. And I've deliberately left your man, Gary Ablett, to probably what will be last because of his... His reclusive ways, as you said. I mean, I've been involved in media projects where he's, even in the past, agreed to do them in advance and then doesn't do them. So I know it's going to be pretty hard to get him, but I'm going to set myself a task, and I might even lean on you at some stage to try and complete the focus of it because, you can't do this series properly unless you get him, given he did it 3 times under your coaching for 2 of those 3 times, Malcolm.
Yeah, of the guys you've done so far, have you found someone really interesting?
Yeah.
Put me aside, because that's not interesting. We know that. But just someone I didn't expect that.
Look, the one we're going to release this week is Peter McKenna, and I of the ones I've done, it was the most engaged I felt anyone was, and look, he was a genuine rock star, wasn't he? I mean, he was hosting his own TV show on a Saturday morning before he would play football. And just to hear the passion, he still catches up with a friend near Victoria Park, and he gets off the train there at Victoria Park. And actually, rather than walk around the stadium, he deliberately walks into the stadium and walks onto the grass, stands in the full forward in the forward square, and walks over to where the change rooms were. He does it regularly because he just and he got quite emotional actually saying what he did that. So that's a good one. I've teed up a Jeff Bleffin interview, Malcolm. Similar era to yourself, the bespectacled Jeff Bleffin. Did it for Essendon in 1972 and had a good chat with Larry Donoghue during the week. We'll be doing his interview at some stage in the next couple of weeks. Geelong player who did it in 1976. So, yeah, look, I will have trouble, though, getting back to your initial point on searching and getting Gary Ablett to commit to it. It's always going to be a challenge.
We're talking to Damien Barrett from AFL.com.au. We're doing it thanks to Polaris, Australia's number one selling side-by-side brand. Thanking Australia for making Polaris Australia's number one selling side-by-side brand 21 years in a row. Damo, was there someone maybe going back a fair way further who kicked 100 in an era where goals were hard to come by? I mean, Ken Farmer over here in South Australia used to do it for fun in his era between the two World Wars. But was there someone maybe back in the VFL era where goals were harder to come by who just stood out?
Look, it's a funny reason. If you go back, and again, the exercise has forced me to that, and I've loved doing it. It was Gordon Coventry, the great Gordon Coventry, who had the record there for total goals kicked until Tony Lockett passed him. But he did it in 1929, so obviously there was a trailblazing element to his work. Coleman didn't play 100 games of footy and yet managed to kick the ton on three occasions. The first of those was 1949. Hudson did it five times. He would have done it 10 times had he not broken down in the very first round of 1972 after, for the previous four seasons, he kicked 100 in each of those years, and he kicked eight goals to halfway of that particular game in round one. At halftime, he had eight goals to his name and then didn't play effectively again for 2 years and only played a handful of games before doing it again in 1977. So, yeah, look, I mean, they're all extraordinary talents. I mean, the last one's Buddy Franklin in 2008, as we know. And you look at the leaderboard now for the Coleman, they've got a tally of 46. And as good a season as Jeremy Cameron's having, he's 46 and we've played 15 completed rounds of footy in terms of matches. So, yeah, it's not happening again, is it? And I think it's quite sad in that way, but it's not going to happen again.
Yeah, I agree. We mentioned Buddy in 2008 being the last one. Now, I mean, you've been around the AFL scene for a long time, quite experienced at the game and talking about the game and watching the game. If you had carte blanche now, the romance of a 100-goal kicker is just one of the greatest things in the competition, I reckon. If you could do one rule change now, I mean, Stephen Hocking at his go, we're going to see what Brad Scott does. I hope they do something. What would you do now? Have you got a little passion to say, let's just open it up somehow?
Yeah, I've always been against keeping players in zones, but I honestly think it's the only way, as a starting point, to potentially get this back into the system because of this rolling maul that we get. And I know the scores in relatively recent weeks have actually improved a little bit. They're getting closer to 100 again, but it's this whole of ground sort of mentality that coaches have, and I think it's lost something as a result of that. How you do? I'm a big fan, Malcolm, of the stand rule, and I know that's got a lot of criticism, even with people I work with in media, but they don't like it. But I like it because it allows the player with the ball to take on that 45-degree angle kick, which they can't do if the player on the mark is allowed to move along that line. So I like that aspect of it. But again, the coaches, and you touched on this in this interview we did, I mean, they have this negative mindset and this mindset that has them defending more than attacking. And ultimately, you're not going to be able to remove that no matter what rule you implement by way of the coaches wanting to defend first and foremost and all-encompassing.
And I know the team that you do support, North Melbourne, which I keep a very close eye on as well. I mean, mate, they can't kick a goal, so how the hell are they going to win? I mean, you can go to the fence to cows come home, but if you can't kick a goal, you're never going to win anything. So I think I would love to see, and I think Craig McRae at Collingwood, even Michael Voss at Carlton, they've freed it up a little bit more to your eyes.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have. And I think Richmond, the mentality of Richmond too is to surge it forward too in that sort of older school way that just had players surging forward. But I know to surge forward, they've already got the numbers behind the ball to begin with. And that is an art in itself. Just on North Melbourne, you haven't got another coaching stint in you?
There's a twinkle in the eye, Damo.
Actually, I was just going to ask you one last question for me. Now, there is another South Australian that's kicked 100 goals. And my word, was he a pin-up boy here for the Adelaide Crows. Tony Modra, where's he on your list, mate?
Yeah, again, work in progress. Got the number for Tony. Just having trouble to actually lock him down and bed him down. So I've got a plan in place, which I won't bore your listeners with at the moment, but we'll have to go to probably plan B on getting him. Yeah, I mean, there was no one. I mean, even in the Victorian sense, there was no one bigger than him when he was when he kicked it in 1903.
Damo, you're talking about guys who kicked 100 goals. You didn't do anything about Sandfall and Waffle, and I understand that, but I do have one for you. In 1985, Malcolm Blight kicked 126 goals for Woodville in a year where they finished bottom, would you believe? 10th of 10, the mighty... were they Warriors or Peckers in those days?
I think we were Warriors.
You'd become Warriors. He also told me that Peter McKenna, who you referred to, he took 13 marks in a best-on-ground performance, standing him in a state game as well in 1972.
Yeah, that's true. I made made the All-Australian team, but Peter kicked 8 goals. But could also say, he'd already had a couple before I got there, and he got 3 pop over the tops. I mean, come on, you show the gooses.
Show the gooses. Hey, Damien, it's a fantastic project, mate. It's on afl.com.au. We look forward to reading all about it. We don't read enough about Blighty over here in South Australia, so we'll definitely be logging on. Thanks for your time on Sports Day.
No, thanks. Good to chat. It's a labour of love speaking to Malcolm Blight in this forum too, so always...
Damien Barrett there from afl.com.au. If you're running a small to medium business as a builder, renovator or tiler, Beaumont Tiles wants to help you. Head to iCanWin.com.au and you could win a $25,000 advertising package to promote and grow your business. Time for a break. Plenty more coming up. We'll catch up with Tommy Wren at the end of the show to talk tennis as well. So keep listening in because you're listening to Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Lumo SA, Aussie-owned, made for South Australia.
Ben Hook and Malcolm Blight with you. If you want to take part in the conversation, 8223 00 0437 693 060. We're going straight to the phone lines because they've been good enough to hang on. Brian from Port Nolunga has called in, wants to talk Port Adelaide. Brian, welcome.
How you going?
Going well.
I want to talk about Port Adelaide. They bought that Guernsey thing up the other week. Again, but they got more problems than that because they'll be looking for a new coach next year and they won't make the finals. Why are they concentrating on a Guernsey?
It's a fair point. So let's just go through a couple of things. Yep. Is the Guernsey a distraction, Malcolm?
No, it's not. No, when you're running out in the ground, no one ever forgets about it.
Is Port Adelaide season over, Malcolm?
Port Adelaide season's more than likely 95% over. There is a 5% chance. However, on the Ken Hinckley thing, they've played in 2 preliminary finals in a row.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's as good as you can do bar one game.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, that's hand. And I reckon a year off sometimes is might just rejig them, do the whole thing. But Ken Hinckley's got a contract for next year. I expect him to coach next year. And I think the board at the Port Adelaide Football Club will say, hang on, okay, we've had it down. The 2 previous year were great. Okay, we didn't make a grand final, but, gee, they were good.
Yep.
So he can still coach. It's going to be the next result. You have 2 bad years, that's when it starts.
Port Adelaide don't look like that. They're not gelling with the coach right now.
No,
I mean, I would argue the last quarter last night was as good a footy as they've played. It was a very good game last night. We're going to speak to Steve from Bellevue Heights. Wants to talk about the Sydney Swans. Steve, welcome.
Yeah, hi, guys. Look, you're talking about longevity in team sport. I mean, I look at Sydney. And, gee, they've been around the mark for a long time. And they get a lot of older players. And they manage to keep doing it year after year. You know, it's quite surprising.
Yes, they are certainly one that during this AFL era are probably just behind Geelong and the Adelaide Football Club to hanging about. I call it hanging. You know, you give yourself a chance, half a chance every year. They've certainly been very good at it. That's a very, very good observation, Steve.
Yeah, one last thing. Do you want a Neil Curley story?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Going back in 88 when he coached Centrals.
Yep.
And his Central lost to Norwood in a final, which is my team. And it happened to be the night of my brother-in-law's 21st. And he was a very good friend of my father-in-law. And he was at our table. And I went up and shook his hand. And I said, I like the way your boys played today. He said, pardon? I said, I like the way your boys played today. He said, we lost. I said, I know. And you have never, ever seen a hand pulled out of a handshake as quick as that. And if looks could kill, I was dead where I stood.
Steve, wonderful call. That is fantastic. Malcolm, on Monday night, we play the Kia Top 7, Australia's most wanted, Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage, cars of the year. We'll see if we can cram 2 in. Your top 7, first of all, away you go.
Right, Frio, 11 wins, top 4 beckons. Well done, top 7. In the 6 in the Kia Top 7, Carlton and Collingwood back in finals together. What a thing.
That is great, yeah.
What a thing. Also, Geelong and Brisbane maintain appearances in finals. They've been very consistent over the last number of years.
They have been, yep. Goes against the grain of what you say, that you've got to bottom out sometime.
They will. They'll fall out. The fourth one, Richmond are looking dangerous. And number 3, Nick Dacos is...
He's something else.
Favourite for the Rising Star.
Well, it's unbackable favourite.
Yeah.
He is something else.
Now, 2 of my favourite things happened on the weekend.
Yep.
Number 2, Hayden Young The young Fremantle players, Mark, wasn't it when he landed?
Scary. What a grab.
And then Mitch Georgiades is Mark.
Mark of the year.
They're back. The mark's back.
Call it off. Just give him the gold medal now. That was unbelievable, that mark. I've got a top seven. It goes on the strength of the fact that the West Coast Fever won the netball championship last night. And Sasha Glasgow, South Australian, was named MVP on court. And I thought, I'm going to give you my best seven ever South Australian netballers. One through to seven here.
Yep.
Number one, Catherine Harvey.
Oh.
Number two, Michelle Dendecker.
Oh, great.
Number three, Natalie Von Berto. Oh. Number four, I've gone for Maddie Proud. Number five, Jenny Kennett. Mm. Number six, Natalie Medhurst. Number seven, I'm going to go for Jackie Delaney, and I've given a couple of apologies out to Laura Von Berto, Rebecca Sanders, Julie Nichol. There's a few in there that have been legends of South Australian netball.
So have you given Harbs number one?
Harvey number one.
Yeah.
She has been an incredibly good player, not just for contacts, and not just for South Australia, not just for the Thunderbirds, but for Australia as well. Australian captain for a period of time. So one of the true legends of South Australian sport. Hey, very quickly, did you see the car accident last night in the British Grand Prix?
Yeah, the F1.
Zhongguan Yu.
Top of the top.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah. How those cars are made now. Not only does he survive that, he walked away pretty much without a scratch.
Yeah,
it is unbelievable, isn't it? Looking forward to the tennis tonight. You'll be tuning in?
Yeah, just for a while, yeah. Not too late.
I can't wait. We're going to catch up with Tom Wren after the break as well. So he will take us through everything that's going on tonight because there's a massive Aussies involved. We've got Jason Kubler, Nick Kyrgios, and Alex Demonor as well, as along with Isla Tomjanovic. For your chance to win a corporate box experience for you and a mate, Adelaide Oval, enter icanwin.com.au. You're listening to Sports Day. On the other side, we catch up with Tommy Wren.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Lumo SA, Aussie owned, made for South Australia.
You're listening to Sports Day. It's Malcolm Blight and Ben Hook in the chair tonight. 8223-0000. That's the week's open line. Discover exceptional customer service. Week's homes, discover different. Time to talk tennis, Malcolm.
Mm.
And we're going to do that with Tom Wren, who, of course, is the chief sports presenter for Channel 9. We are right hard up against the news, so we won't keep him too long. He comes to us thanks to Lumo SA, powering local footy and fans in South Australia. Switch to Lumo SA today. Tommy Wren, welcome back to Sports Day.
Blighty, Hooky, loving the show. You're absolutely dominating. Thanks for having me on again tonight.
Hey, mate, it's been an amazing week of tennis. The Aussies are going wonderfully. I mean, we're going to potentially see an Australian make it all the way through to a semi-final, minimum chips. But the big story, of course, once again, is Nick Kyrgios. Pat Cash today has accused him of being a cheat. What's your opinion, Tom? Is Nick Kyrgios a cheat?
I'm not sure if he's a cheat, but he pushes it, doesn't he? For example, last week, he was incensed that Tsitsipas didn't get a violation, you know, for hitting that ball into the box, the crowd. But, I mean, Nick's probably got a short memory. Remember at the doubles, the Australian Open, he hit the ball into the crowd and admittedly, he gave the young fan a tennis racket and, you know, it was lovely. But I think Nick's so good. And we've said this time and again, he's so good and there's no need to make up the rules as you go as well. You don't have to umpire the match as well as play it. Just play it. Let the officials take care of it and you concentrate on what you're doing. That's the frustrating part for me because if he puts all that other nonsense aside, I think he's the player to beat for the rest of Wimbledon.
Here's what I can't have, Tom. And we have courtside microphones everywhere at the tennis. He stands there underneath the central chair umpire and calls him dumb and a disgrace and uses all sorts of other profanities. And the central chair umpire, clearly because they don't have the power to, do nothing about it. I find that's what really upsets me about Nick. There's got to be some sense of respect for officialdom and respect for your opponents. And that's where I think Nick lets himself down.
It's a two-way street, isn't it? And you know what? He probably has a point, Cookie and Blighty, in the sense that if that was him, he probably would have got a code violation and would have had points taken off him. But look at the track record. So, I mean, it's a two-way street, respect. And if you're going to give it out and if you're going to, you know, act like that and use those profanities, as you say, Hookie, then you've got to expect that there's probably not going to be as much, you know, respect coming back your way or as much leniency. So, look, he's box office. He's must-watch. He's incredible. To sit there and watch him, you're on the edge of your seat the whole time. But it comes at the price of he hasn't fulfilled, I don't think, the potential that he's had. And I don't know that he particularly cares, but if he wants to, I think this Grand Slam right now is ripe for the taking.
Oh, Tommy, you couldn't have said any better. You know the word respect, you know, we talk about it in all sorts of sporting spheres and in life in general. But when he attacked the age of a lines person, now I don't even know if it was a male or female, when he said, well, can they see because they're so old? That is the most disrespectful thing. And he'll be old one day, you know. And it's not because of me. I find that so disrespectful, taking on someone because of their age.
Spot on. If they're not doing the right job, then, you know, you can have a crack. Now, he obviously disagreed with one call, but, I mean, it's so eminently frustrating. You're spot on, Blighty. I mean, he wants this respect. And what I also, and Hookie, we spoke about this last week, he's great in a sense. When he was at the Australian Open, he whipped the fans into a frenzy. He wants them all acting like they're at a circus and he's the ringmaster. And that's great. But then when one fan dares go against him, he says their etiquette and their behaviour is appalling. I mean, Nick, come on. Can't you see what you're saying? You're going completely against what you did 6 months earlier.
And then
surely someone's got to be telling him that. And Blighty, I'm with you. Like, show some respect. And it's like your mum used to tell you, you know, you get what you give.
Yes.
Just be a good person and people will be good to you the other way. It's pretty simple.
And then he spits at him. You're kidding.
Yeah.
Hey, can we just change the subject to one of my favourite players, Alex de Minaur? He just chases everything. He's a star.
He's good, isn't he? And look, the beauty is if he wins and Nick wins, and I expect both of them will, Blighty, we'll get an Australian semi-finalist at Wimbledon because they'll meet in the quarters. Mm-hmm. And that'll be intriguing. Because Nick has brought this energy and it's quite intimidating. And I think Tsitsipas was actually intimidated by it. I think he's genuine when he said he felt bullied out there. And I think that probably won Nick the match, or at least helped. I'll be fascinated if he does the same thing against a fellow Aussie. I think it'll be a completely different dynamic. And I think that might actually help de Minaur should they both get through. Four Aussies through to the second week at Wimbledon, first time since 93. It's great, especially when you consider we've lost Ash Barty. It's nice to see there's actually a few others that are doing some good things. And maybe, Blighty, they're thriving because they're not in that shadow of Ash Barty, which was a pretty enormous shadow to have to work through.
You've touched on Alex de Minaur. You've touched on Nick Kyrgios. Jason Kubler will play the number 11 seed, Taylor Fritz.
Yeah.
Can you just tell us something about Jason Kubler? Because unless you've been sitting up at night watching it, you've probably never heard of this guy before. Suddenly he's into the fourth round of Wimbledon.
Probably never had a run. Was a fantastic junior, but has had a horrific run with injuries, Hookie, and only now is just starting to get a better run at it. So I think that's one of the reasons why. Look, he beat Jack Sock in a previous round, who's a big serving American. He's got another one here in Taylor Fritz. Because he's played a similar type of match, I think he's a chance. Look, of course, he's the underdog. He's going to have to play extremely well. But if he can, you know, just hang around like he did in his previous match, he's a chance. I think he's the biggest outsider of the four that are left, and Ila Tomljanovic is the other one on the women's side. That said, he is still a chance to go through, albeit I think he'll have to beat his best to get through to the quarterfinals.
Just on the women, mate, I noticed Simona Halep, she's down to 16th seed now. I've sort of, you know, you watch it, but you just missed it for a while. Yeah.
2019 champion.
Yeah.
Fantastic player and wonderful. You know what, though, Blighty, she runs into a lady.
You're a rat for this one, aren't you, Tommy? The Spaniard Paula Badosa.
Well, just between friends, fellas, I've just got a couple of dollars on her.
Gamble responsibly, Tom.
Spot on.
That's right.
She can play. She's got such powerful game. I think if she brings her best, Paula Badosa, and it's on grass, I think she wins. But you know that Halep will just be... She's like a terrier.
Yeah.
As soon as you give her an inch, she will be at you and at you and at you and just get everything back. So Badosa's going to have to be good. But I wouldn't be surprised if the winner even came on the women's side because it's so open. I wouldn't be surprised if the winner came from that fourth round match tonight. So I think that will be a blockbuster match, that match between Halep and
Badoza a little bit later tonight.
Rennie, it's a big night tonight. Of course, Rafael Nadal is in action, the number two seed. And for the Aussies, a woman through, Ola Tomjanovic, will take on Elise Cornet. So, massive night. Massive night for you as well, because you've got to get in front of the desk at Channel 9 and start reading the news. So, thanks for your time on Sports Day.
Pleasure. Thanks, boys. Have a great one.
Tommy Wren there, the Chief Sports Presenter for Channel 9. We're just going to talk some Sandful very quickly before we go to a break. We do it thanks to Kia, Australia's most wanted. The Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage, cars of the year. Let's go through the scores very quickly. Glenelg, 8-4-52, got knocked over by the Crows, 19-12-126. A Crow Sandful premiership is a real thing.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? The second play third there, it was a great win. Now, what about Central's win over South Adelaide?
By 1 point, and that's South are done. South are out for the year. Of course, Bryce Gibbs, who was on this show last week, replacing you, shoulder injury. They've had a lot of injuries this year, and I think South are done. What about North Adelaide belting Port? 1-4 for Port Adelaide.
Yeah, I was trying to look at that. They had a few injuries, Port, but I mean, North are a really good team, aren't they?
Look, people are saying that this replaces the 1-8 from the 89 grand final. Don't be ridiculous, but there are some challenges at Port Adelaide if it's going that badly. Another setback for West. I thought they were improving a little bit, but Sturt beat them pretty comfortably. And the match of the round was on Sunday. The Eagles got a touch-up from Norwood, who have sort of come from the clouds a bit. Won their last three straight, Norwood, so they've jumped up to fourth and looking like they might be the team to beat. They play North Adelaide this weekend. That will be a test.
Yeah, they will. I mean, the Eagles have lost Hayes and Tedis, and also Ballander, the ruckman, was out. So, they're three really classy players. They're just trying to find their way now, the Eagles.
Well, Malcolm, that wraps us up for the night. David Wilde will be back in the chair tomorrow to lock horns with you. Nice to see you once again.
Yeah, good, Ben. And have a great night.
Yeah, great night. Thanks very much, everyone. Enjoyed your company. Wilde's back tomorrow. You've been listening to Ben Hook and Malcolm Blight. This has been Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia's EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Lumo SA, Aussie owned, made for South Australia.